Welcome to New World of Work, a podcast exploring the new frontier of the modern workforce. I'm Rhys Black, Head of Workplace Design at Oyster, a global employment platform making it easier than ever to build a brilliant team on an international scale. On New World of Work, we'll hear from some of the world's best and brightest people and culture experts on cutting-edge topics that people operations professionals need to hear today, all through a global lens. Join us as we navigate this new world of work together and learn more about each other along the way. Thank you so much for tuning in and supporting the podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts on how we can improve the show and what you're interested in learning about next. Please take a moment to share your thoughts on the New World of Work listener survey, linked in the show notes below. Looking forward to hearing from you. As we learn to navigate this new world of work, one topic that's become a hot button issue for many organizations is navigating parenthood in the workplace. Juggling a full-time job while raising children is no easy feat, and it's not always easy to predict what tomorrow will look like. And while there are certainly plenty of challenges for all parents, mothers often face specific difficulties that can leave them feeling burnt out, underappreciated, or misunderstood. In this special panel episode of New World of Work, I'm sitting down with three working mums to get their perspective on navigating motherhood in the workplace today. Featuring our very own Kim Rohr, Principal People Partner at Oyster, Lisa Canelli, Global Product Marketing Strategist at Klarna, and Lucia Aguilar, founder of Tatam Digital Influencer Marketing. The panel discussion will cover how people ops leaders can best support parents in the workplace, why a flexible approach is key, and much more. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, my name is Lucia. I'm the CEO and founder of Tatam. Tatam is a digital influencer marketing agency. We help companies grow. We help them accelerate their growth. Besides that, I have another enterprise, which is an online platform where I teach mostly women to take care about their finance and investment, and also a little bit about entrepreneurship. I have over 25,000 students. And before that, I was lead of growth at a chemtech company in Berlin where I met Lisa. And before that, I worked 6 years in a multinational company of fast-moving consumer goods.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lucia. Lisa, how about I pass it to you next?
My name is Lisa, and I am working as the head of global product marketing strategy for a company called Klarna, which is a buy now, pay later and shopping company. I'm based in Stockholm, Sweden, but I am from the US originally. So I've been here for less than a year. I just started. Before that, I was the chief marketing officer of a company called Fishbrain, also based here in Stockholm. It's an app and social network for fishing, which is the world's most popular hobby. So if you know someone who likes fishing, I guarantee you they like it quite a lot. And that's why there's an app and community for it. And before that, I was the head of marketing at Clue, which is where I met Lucia. And Clue is an app for female health and knowing when your period is coming. And yeah, before that, way before that, I worked in PR and as a journalist. So I started my career as a sports writer, in fact. I've been in Stockholm for 5 years. Before that, I was in Berlin for 4 years. I spent a year in Vancouver, Canada, and I'm originally from Seattle, but also lived in the East Coast of the US too.
Okay, and last but not least, Kim.
Hello, I'm Kim. I work at Oyster, where I focus on employee experience and people things. And I've just transitioned into a new role that I haven't quite learned how to talk about yet as the principal people partner, which if you think about, you know, principal engineer or principal architect like that, but for people stuff. So sort of like employee experience and HR business partner on super speed. And I've been at Oyster now for almost 2 years and just a little over a year and a half. And before that, I was doing some consulting work, and I was the co-founder of a company called TendLab, which focuses on helping companies make better workplaces for working caregivers. And prior to that, I spent about a decade as the VP of people at various tech startups. And prior to that, I worked in theater. So sort of roundabout career, but I have been here in Berkeley, California for all of it.
I think this must be the third episode and the second episode in a row that we've had someone from a I guess an ex-performing background, performing arts background.
There's a trend developing on this podcast.
I mean, it's a good crossover from theater to tech. I talk about this with every theater person that I know who gets into tech. We're like, this makes so much sense. Why don't more theater people who want to have paychecks work in tech? Pretty much anyone who gets tired of working really hard and making no money in theater is like, what about that tech thing? Maybe there's something I could do there. Turns out there is.
Fantastic. Okay. So we can get into today's topic, which is talking about parenthood in this new world of work. So let's start fairly general, and then again we'll get into the details as we go. And I'm sure there'll be lots of interesting nuggets that'll come up. Just starting off, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges for working parents right now?
Like the time and need for flexibility right now in parenting. I don't know if it was this way when we were kids and our parents were raising us, but I feel like I don't know how I would be a working parent with a career if I couldn't work from home right now. I know people do it. People do it all the time. But for myself, I don't know. Like, I feel like we're barely getting by with being able to get the kids off to school, get them home. Oh no, someone's sick. You got to go pick them up. Someone's sick. They can't go to school today. Like, it's always someone getting sick, or just like the amount of time that passes from 6:30 to 7:30 in the morning. It's like, I feel like we've lived like six lifetimes in that hour before we get the kids off to school. And showing up to work right after that, it feels so exhausting every day. Like, by the time I get to my computer, knowing that I have the flexibility to take the time on most days and like take a breather before I log on and start working. Like, I don't know how I would do it, honestly. If we like hustled the kids out the door and then I had to go commute to an office and be with people right away. Like, it's just so tiring being a parent of young people.
I think once you have the control of your own agenda, then it gets easier. But as Kim was saying, the first year when I came back from maternity leave, I was working in a multinational, working 16 hours a day in an office, leaving my kid in a daycare almost 16 hours a day. Well, it was actually open 12 hours a day, and I had to leave my kid 12 hours a day in a daycare, a 5-month old. So yes, once you have control over your agenda and some flexibility, things get easier.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, what's the hardest part? I mean, where do I even start with the hardest part? I kind of think the hardest part, it's really, I think, just finding the balance and like what you can, being really hard on yourself about what you can and can't do and not doing everything. Like, for example, like I used to be cramming in a lot of after school activities for my kids or one of my kids. But like, those are not designed for working people. They would start at like 3:15 in the afternoon. And even if I have a flexible job in Sweden, you know, Sweden is like all places pretty understanding, it's still not great and it cuts into the day. And so when I was like, all right, it's great to do extracurriculars, but like she can do them on the weekend, or like I'll do one day a week and we'll like, my husband and I will trade off or something, you know, and just being like, okay, that's good. Like you just, it's fine to not do everything. That made a difference. And my other thing, this is less and less hard and like more in like boundary setting or whatever, but like I used to work on the weekends a lot, and now I just do not work on the weekends. I cannot. It is impossible for me to work on the weekends at all because I have three kids and they're like, it's just impossible. So fortunately, I have a job where I'm in a position where like I don't have to work on the weekends. That is the other thing. I have that privilege of like I'm high up enough in my career or whatever, and like I've set my own agenda and I have a job where it's like I can set those boundaries. But it would be impossible if I couldn't do that. Like, I don't know how people do that.
Well, that's where the flexibility comes into play. Like you were saying that, and I was like, well, I often work on the weekends. My husband often works on the weekends, but it's because we trade off things during the week. So like my workday generally ends at 4 p.m. because the kids get home at 5. Well, now I'm pushing it later because they're getting a little older. We can push dinner time a little bit later, and you know, the schedules aren't ever fluid. But you know, if I'm taking my daughter to ballet at 3 o'clock one day a week, I know that that's a day where my workday ends at 3 o'clock. And that's not like I'm tracking my hours and I have to make up those extra 3 hours of work some other time, but
But sometimes there's like a, you know, there's a chunk of work. And so I'm either doing it after they go to bed, or I'm doing it on a weekend, or sometimes because Oyster is such a globally distributed company, sometimes I like working a little bit on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening. You know, I'll like do a little work during nap time or during after the kids go to bed, because it gives me a chance to catch up with my counterpart in Australia, with who has already started his Monday. And it gives me this little like head start on the week of like, well, I already know what Matt and his team are up to today, or kind of calms down those Sunday scaries a little bit when you can peek into someone's Monday that's already started. But without the flexibility to do that, like I definitely could not be working a full work week and working weekends the way I did when I was like, you know, in my 20s working in a tech startup in San Francisco, which I was laughing about that the other night. I don't know if you ever have this. I don't know what time you guys eat dinner, but we're finished with dinner in our house by 6 o'clock. And I remember thinking, like, I used to be in the office in San Francisco at 6 o'clock. I wouldn't get home till 7, 7:30. And I'd make dinner at 8. And after I had kids, I was like, nope, I leave the office at 4. This is what I have to do. But again, to your point, Lisa, like having the privilege to be able to do that, being in a place in your career where you can say, these are my new boundaries, is, I don't think that's very common for working parents.
Would you say that mothers face more challenges when it comes to working versus working fathers, or different challenges? Why not?
Well, I am from South America, and like I'm originally from Argentina, although I live in Spain. And well, even though Spain is very not Swedish when it comes to men and women taking care of kids. But like my husband, 4 years ago, I'm not talking about like my parents, not even my parents, like my husband, like a few years ago, like it wasn't good received in his job that he would take a morning off to take the kids to the yearly visit to the physician, or just miss one day in the office before the pandemic, just because the kid was sick. So that wasn't there, you know? And like every time I had to travel from Argentina to Germany, which I was doing that like 5 times a year for a week, leaving my kids at home, like people were asking, and where are your kids and who's taking care of them? Whereas my husband, who was traveling like the same or more than me, nobody ever asked him.
And Lisa, anything else to add?
It's interesting, like, again, living in Sweden, because I do think of all the places I've lived, and I lived in Germany too, and I've lived in Canada, I've lived in the US, and like Sweden is, I would say, by far the best place for sort of more balance when it comes to this. Like, I mean, right now where I'm at a company of 6,000 people, and there's like always someone on parental leave. It's always moms, dads, whatever, going off. There's dads who come back from 6 months leave. You know, it's like, it's very nice and it's very understood, which is amazing. And like, I appreciate that a lot. But, you know, I don't know how much of it is like, you know, I put it on myself to feel more guilt. Like, I sometimes try to like stress less, because I feel like my husband is better at stressing less about things when it comes to the balance between parenting and work. Not to say he doesn't, like, he absolutely does. But I think that, like, you know, he might feel a little, like, all the stress as I put it on myself, right? I have to be everything perfect all the time. And I don't know that he feels that all the time, which is, I'm jealous.
Pure American upbringing coming out.
Yeah, probably.
You got to be influenced by your surroundings more.
I think so.
Yeah, it's so different here in the U.S. with the way that parents of varying genders are treated surrounding the birth of their child. Like when my husband works for a major university, they are exempt from state policies around, like, we have very minimal state policies in California around paid leave. His university is exempt from that because they don't pay into the tax system or whatever. So he got no paid leave when our daughter was born 6 years ago. He got zero paid leave. He took a week of vacation that he had saved up, and he took a week of unpaid leave. And that was it. He went back to work when she was 2 weeks old. I was working for a tech startup where I had written the parental leave policy. So I took 3 months of paid leave, but I was home alone with her, which caused, you know, strain in our relationship. It caused strain in the way that it like amplified the differences in how we related to work, because I saw myself primarily as the parent to this baby, who knew everything about her and knew all of the ways to take care of her. And he was coming home every day from work, like burnt out from a day at work. And I'd like shove a baby in his direction and be like,
please take this baby so I can go to the bathroom alone for a minute. And he'd be like, I just got home from work. Like, I want to use the restroom. I want to get a drink of water. Like, and it just, it caused all this dynamic because he wasn't allowed to be a parent fully. Like, he wasn't allowed to step into his role as a working dad at the beginning, like at the dad part of it anyway. But when our son was born at the beginning of the pandemic, the funny thing was that my daughter's daycare was closed. And because the schools were closed, there was an Emergency Paid Leave Act passed in the U.S. And he was able to qualify for 12 weeks of paid leave because our daughter's daycare was closed. Not because he had just had a baby, but because our older child was out of school. So it was really good timing to have a baby at the start of a pandemic because it meant that he could take 3 months of paid leave, which we didn't have with our first. I got laid off right after that. So we were both just home. I didn't have a job and he was being paid on paid leave. And it was the first time that we had sort of been on like truly equal parenting footing where like neither of us was thinking about work. We were just thinking about parenting. And then when it was time for him to go back to work, working from home, we had to kind of figure out what that next phase of challenge was going to be. But like, it's almost unheard of here, even in the like the tech industry. We did a lot of research on this through TendLab, but there's the motherhood penalty that everyone talks about with having babies, that you're, the more kids you have, the more your pay declines over time. Like the rates, I'm not a math person, but the rates don't add up. They don't line up. You get paid less for having more babies. And the opposite is true with men. Like their pay actually tends to increase when they have children.
In your past roles, you were the one in the position defining that parental policy, that leave policy in the businesses that you were in. And I guess thinking of the person that's listening to this podcast, that's probably going to be them, or they're at least going to have some level of say in that. So I guess, what would be some advice you would give to the people leader that is kind of like Kim, that is listening to this podcast, in terms of helping them firstly create that foundation of understanding through their business so that the workplace knows that it is crucial to be supporting parents, and then actually put that into writing, put that into place with a policy? What would be your thoughts?
I'm super triggered by this because I had the same experience as you, Kim. So my husband also had 2 weeks off twice, and we didn't have the pandemic. So my kids are older. But once my kid was 1 month old, my husband's boss sent him to travel. And from the day he was 1 month until the day he was 6 months, my son, my husband was more days outside my home than inside my home, including weekends. He had to travel so much. And I was alone with two kids, two babies. So what I would say is that the talent that we have, it's amazing. If you saw Lisa working with breastfeeding with one hand, breastfeeding with the other, and I don't know, typing with, I don't know, the elbows, and you've seen what these women could have done, and you don't have a supporting place to understand that, you're losing magnificent talent. You know, I know that the company that lost me because they didn't support my post-maternity leave coming back, they lost it. I built up two huge companies, you know, like I know my worth now, but like, if you don't have that time, of course, it's not the same. Now I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. It's so easy now. But, you know, it wasn't easy when I just came back, when they were 5 months and my husband was traveling all the time. So companies need to understand and secure the talent and understand that we work differently, but we get things done.
I guess to maybe drive the point home there, what would you say to those companies? Like if you were talking to them right now, you know, years have gone by, what would you tell them for, you know, the lessons they should have learned to be able to put in place for their business and keep someone like yourself?
Well, they have huge departments trying to do that and they're not able. They're huge global international companies. So they're listed companies. They have to understand that the core hours, they have to understand flexibility. They have to understand working from home. They have to understand
that you probably won't get things done like 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, like we used to, but we are going to get amazing things done. And it's just also, it's not always, and it's not like that from the day that you're a mom until the day you retire, you know, it's just a few years.
Maybe something tactical that just came into my mind. Do you think something might have been useful where maybe there was an exemption as part of a travel policy that said that if you are a new parent, first 6 months, first 9 months, first year, whatever that may look like, that you're exempt from travel for work, or it could only be to a certain degree, not as much as, not unlimited, let's say. Do you think that would have been beneficial?
For sure. But then it also goes against the career, right? Like my husband had an exponential growth in his career during that time as well. So, and like the, I think we don't take into consideration enough the like physical, mental, emotional changes that happen when you give birth. I mean, obviously now we're just talking about the birthing parent, but like it is physically, hormonally different and you need time to recover from that. So to expect people to jump right back into work or to be able to parent by themselves with no support system is an unrealistic expectation, just given like the physicality of what your body has gone through. And so to have your spouse not be there, to have your partner not be there, to not have whoever is your support system, if you're a single parent, like your network of support, whoever those people are, to not have that and to be alone with a newborn can be very scary. And in those moments when you're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through the next day, I don't know how I'm going to get through the night, the terror you feel when the sun starts to go down and you know you have another sleepless night ahead of you, like there's something in the back of your mind there that is also worried about your career, that is also worried about how am I going to not just get through this terrible night, but like how am I going to ever go back to work? How am I going to, like, am I going to be capable of working? And the truth is, like, once you get through that hormone soupy phase, you come out of it the other side, and like, I just love the image you were conjuring of Lisa working and breastfeeding, because that was my early days with my son. With my daughter, I went back to work and I was doing the pumping game. But with my son being home in a pandemic, he didn't go to daycare for the first like year and a half. And he was just home with me working. He joined every all-hands meeting in the morning. So I remember days where I was speaking at our company all-hands, holding my baby on my hip, and younger women would reach out to me after and say, like, you know, very kind and flattering things that I'm like too embarrassed to say out loud. But they would say, like, this gives me hope that like I could be a working mom someday, and that it's possible to be smart and to do good work and also have a young baby, even when they're like there with you physically while you're working. Like, yeah, that sucked. It's much better now that he's at daycare. But like companies who don't realize that that's possible and who don't think about creative solutions to enabling working parents to show up, like, they're really missing out. Like you, Lucy, I'm like, I know my worth. I knew that I could show up and do good work, even though I was, you know, one hand like trying to get the baby to stop crying while I was reading my slides out loud. Like, it wasn't ideal, but like, we all show up the best we can and we can do amazing stuff.
One of the central themes that seems to be emerging from today's discussion is the need for a more flexible and open-minded approach to the workplace. Becoming a parent alters you fundamentally as a person and as an employee. So it's important that organizations recognize this by making space for the changes. If we can collectively embrace the fact that parents and caregivers require a slightly more flexible schedule to function optimally, this new world of work will be a much better place for everyone. Next, let's hear what Lisa, Kim, and Lucia had to say about some of the progress that's been made in this area and what still needs to be done.
Lucia, you mentioned before that some of the experiences that you've had, which have maybe not been the most positive, have not been a long time ago. It wasn't a generation ago. It was, you know, maybe within the last decade or so. From your experiences, have you seen the trajectory going in the right direction?
I do see a lot of creator economy surging, right? And a lot of people understanding that maybe outside a company, can do better or win more, both economically and in time. Well, I'm with YouTubers all day, right? And Instagrammers. So I see that in the every day. And I think we are developing new laws on how we want to work, on how much pressure we want to have, on how much responsibility we want to have. I think we are not accepting, some of us, the lucky ones, we are not accepting what I accepted 8 years ago when I came back from a maternity leave. So I think from one side or the other, so it's ours that the workforce won't hire us because we won't be hired under those rules, or the creator's economy and this shift in the global economy, we can make some changes that companies will have to adapt if they want to have amazing workers.
What do you think that people, leaders that are listening, could maybe learn from what you've seen to maybe even put in place in the companies that they work for?
I mean, it comes back to, like, again, sort of the control and the privilege and the flexibility. And if you're your own boss, yeah, maybe you don't have the security of a company, but, like, you get to decide. You get to decide who you work with. You get to decide your hours. You know, you get to decide, like, how does it work for you? I mean, I do a lot of coaching and consulting and freelance on the side of my full-time job. And, like, I do think, to, like, totally undermine what I said about not having a career plan, like, someday I might actually go full-time coaching, consulting, just because it gives me that control and flexibility, you know? So I think that's part of it. And so, like, what would be the advice to people leaders on that is, like, I mean, trust people to do the work, right? Trust people, like, give them the flexibility, give them the ownership. And, like, if they can't handle it or they can't, you know, do the work, that's one thing. But, like, most of the time people, you know, they just want a space to, like, deliver.
I really love what you just said, that people want a space to deliver, because I think that's what I see with working parents the most, is they know that they can show up. They're just not going to show up the same way that they used to. And so creating flexible enough work environments, and that goes from your policy to your practice to how you coach managers and supporting people, like everything is a part of this. Giving people the space to say, like, we trust you to get your work done. Do it when you need to do it. My husband calls it working in the margins, because sometimes when we have a kid sick home and I've got meetings all day long, he's like, it's okay, I'll take the day off. I can work in the margins. We talk about that a lot, that, like, that's sometimes what being a working parent is, especially with young kids or with older kids. I see some of my coworkers, like, they'll be working from the sidelines at the basketball game or the soccer practice or the whatever. And that's not to say that you should always do that, but, like, yeah, sometimes I work while my kid's in dance class. And that, the fact that that's okay is a big deal for me. Like, I can take a call while I'm walking to go pick up the dry cleaning, or I can take a call while I'm, you know, I can have deep thinking time while I'm washing the dishes. And, like, it all counts as work. Just give us the space to show up and we will deliver.
What are some of the new strategies or policies that you've seen that have been starting to come into place in different companies that help support working parents?
I mean, I feel like flexibility is the word of the day, but flexibility in work hours, having less rigid work hours is one of the key things that parents ask for, one of the key things that parents want. In terms of, like, inclusion and equitability, I think an important thing to look at is your caregiver status of your workforce. Most companies are not tracking the caregiver status of their employees. And knowing how much of your employee population is impacted by caregiving duties will open your eyes. There's a ton of great research about this that I won't take time on right now, but there's a ton of great research that shows that companies historically underestimate the amount of their employee population that has caregiving duties, and also the extent to which those impact their ability to show up at work. So if you know that that 75% of your workforce has caregiving duties, and those caregiving duties, whether that's elder care or child care or spousal care, or have someone they take care of, and you know that that impacts their ability to show up at work, the way you craft your policies, the way you design your work days, the way you balance synchronous and asynchronous work, it's all going to impact. But because caregivers have been forced for so long to hide their caregiving duties, particularly the men, companies aren't built to be supportive of that. So it's really looking at, what does my employee population need? And how can I rethink the way I'm designing our work style to be supportive of that? And flexibility is one of the biggest and easiest ones. It doesn't cost you more money. It just costs you some empathy
Think of it like a creative challenge. How can we still get done what we need to get done, but not do it in a 9-to-5 office setting?
Sierra, Lisa, you seen anything in the workplace recently that you think is worthwhile sharing?
We have very young adults working. Most of our employees are young adults. We have some mothers and one father, and they have better health benefits. And yes, we don't have very strict hours, so they can deliver on themselves. But one thing that for me is important also in the policies is the career path. I was terrified with my career path when I had my first baby, and I was about to get promoted, and I was unlisted from the list to be promoted because of that. So I think having something of a career path that goes along with the size of maternity leave or caregiving, it's important. It's important to know that you didn't lost it, that you didn't lost like that fast track you were in, you know? And that's something that I always tell people, that they are still being considered as their top performers they were. It doesn't matter. And like, it takes time to readjust, but like that doesn't take you out of your game, you know?
Something that we've seen in the research at TemLab is that the period of reboarding, bringing someone back from leave, is super critical to their ability to be successful and feel comfortable at work. It's something we've just launched like a couple months ago at Oyster, is an explicit reboarding practice that mirrors our full new hire onboarding process. The way you support people in returning to work after leave is just as important as the paid time off that they get. And part of that is reassuring them that, as you said, like the ramp up is expected to be slow. You're not expected to be at 100% on day one back from the office. And here is how I'm going to support you as your manager. And here's how the company is going to support you. And here's what you can expect. And let's map out a plan together that works for everyone. And letting people know before they go on leave that that's what they can expect when they come back. Letting them know that if they're out on leave during a promotion cycle, are they still eligible for that promotion cycle? Asking them how they would like to be contacted while they're out on leave. Like, there's a lot of really specific tactical things that you can do to help someone feel like you're going out on parental leave, but you're still a part of this company. And your career, like your timeline doesn't stop because you're having a child. I wonder, Reese, if we can like how we can open source some of the stuff that we've just created. I think that's like tactically, I want to give it away to everybody. Like,
it's so true. It's awesome that you're doing that, putting that into practice. Like, I don't know that I've had that document or that process in anywhere I work, but since I had a kid, I've always said that, because I came back and I was like, am I just bad at working now? My brain is like soup.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, okay, it takes some time. But I remember like my first week back from leave, sitting in a room with somebody I used to have great conversations with, staring at a whiteboard they were drawing on. And I was like, I don't understand a single thing that's happening. Like, what's wrong with me? And now every time I'm in a meeting with someone who's back from leave and I can see that look on their face of like, oh shit, I've lost it. Like, I always say to them at least, hey, I know your brain is soup right now. It's fine. Give yourself time. Like, at least I'm like on a one-to-one basis, I can tell people I know that's happening. And it's not just moms. It's like dads too. I've seen it both ways. But I think it's awesome that you can have a process, because that is real.
So I just want to actually almost call out one of the things that you said, Lucia, that I think could be really useful for people that are listening. The idea that there's kind of this elephant in the room when it comes to career progression and career progression frameworks, where it's just not accounted for. There's no, you know, additional career track or consideration that's called out explicitly that I've ever seen, at least in the businesses that I've worked in. So for a people leader that's listening, to maybe have a think about what does the parent durations need to be as part of your career progression, I think at a minimum, that would just help reduce anxieties. That is, it's not just this elephant in the room that is not being spoken about, but everybody sees it and everybody's worried about what does this mean for me if I have children. I think that's a very useful thing for people listening. We're rapidly coming up on time, but I just want to, kind of following on from that question again, I just always try and think about the person that's listening to this podcast right now. For the people leader that's sitting listening to this podcast and they're going, we're not really doing this very well, what advice would you give to them to go to the other execs in their company and say, hey, look, we have a major problem. we know there's parents in this company. We know that there will be expecting parents in this company. And we should be setting ourselves up for success to be able to support these people, because we would be in big problems if we lost XYZ different person. What advice would you give to that people leader to go to the rest of their exec team to be able to at least start making baby steps towards improving that?
I mean, I would say, and this is not specific to this topic, but just in general, it's like, I would go in with a plan, like be solution oriented and be like, this is the plan. This is what it's going to take to execute on it. Here's the risks if we don't do it, and make it an offer you can't refuse. It's like, we cannot do this, but like, here's all the bad stuff that's going to happen. And if you lay it out there and you see the impact to the business, it should be a no-brainer, because it is a huge impact to the business to lose your best people if you're not supporting them through like this stage of their life. That's my take anyway. It's like, don't ask permission. Just be like, this is what we're doing and this is why it makes sense.
That is such great advice, and like why Lisa is a good coach, because I was going to say, like, it's really hard to get that buy-in. You can't go in and ask. As uncomfortable as it might be for you HR leaders listening who feel disrespected by your executive teams at times, or who feel like your department doesn't get budget, doesn't get listened to, it can feel insurmountable to say, and now I want to go ask for this parental support thing. And everything I do feels so squishy. And they're just going to think this is like a nice to have. Go in with a plan. Gather your data. Show what other companies are doing, what your competitors are doing, what happens when you lose these people. And if you have data from employee engagement survey, this is why you track your caregiver data. So you can say like, look, our caregivers are less engaged. Or when people come back from leave, this is what we notice. You're not going to solve this overnight. And you're not going to solve it by going to your executive team and saying, we should support working parents better. Because then they're going to say, okay, how, why, what's it going to cost? What's the benefit? Come prepared.
Lucia, any thoughts?
No, totally agree with this. Totally agree with Lisa. And yes, you should come with a plan and then reinforce it. Like, there are a lot of companies with great plans and huge departments to do plans, but then they're not being done. So plan, amazing, yes, and reinforcement. And lead with example as well. I think the major conquerors that we are going to see in the next generation in these matters are men conquering their own paternal leaves and their own working father rights. So once we have more leaders taking their kids to the physician at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, the more we're going to have an equal workplace for women and men.
So this is a question we like to ask everyone that comes on the podcast, and the answers that we have to this question never cease to amaze me. So the question is, what is the best mistake you've ever made and why? Who wants to start us off?
The best mistake I ever done was to quit my corporate job without any plan B and not knowing what I was going to do. That was on a Friday. On a Monday, after the weekend, a good friend called me to take a digital role in a startup where I met Lisa, and that was the explosion of my career. So, and I was able to accept it because I already had resigned to the other job, which I was still continue working with them because I get a notice, but I had the flexibility and the mental space to take on a new adventure that was a really different type of work that I was doing. So I would say jumping in the pool without knowing if there was water was a good mistake.
I guess I quit my job at the peak of like a recession in 2008, right? Yeah, 2008, when like sort of the economy tanked. I quit my job and like sold all my stuff, and my, you know, husband and I moved across the country and totally started up from scratch. Which was like, in retrospect, what were we doing? But it was like, it got me into working in a different industry. And I started working in like, what was at the time not even really called startups, but it was a tech company. So yeah, that worked out okay, eventually. Similar to Lucia, put me on a different path.
In alignment with this topic that we're talking about, in my second pregnancy, I talked about my pregnancy very openly at work in a culture that I wasn't totally on board with. Because I was trying to like change things. Like, it was my first pregnancy. Everyone was all about it. And I wasn't the first person who was pregnant. And it was a big joyous thing. And my second, the company was a little bit more hesitant, I guess. And people would ask me curious questions at lunch and I would just like answer them very openly. And I thought I was doing this great thing. And then I got scolded for it. I got scolded for like talking too much about pregnancy at work, using pregnancy brain as an excuse for why I like forgot my lines halfway through the all hand, even though it was true. And at the time I was like, it felt like I made this big mistake in my career. I pissed off my boss and I was making people uncomfortable, which made me feel really bad. But then that sort of, I don't know, it like radicalized me. And I was like, no, like I should be able to leave a meeting because I have to go to the bathroom because there's a baby dancing on my bladder. I should be able to take a minute and pause because I've forgotten what I was about to say. Or if someone asks me a question, I should be able to answer it honestly. I should not have to try to hide this thing that I physically cannot hide. And that really put me on a different path. That put me like, I didn't end up staying with that company forever. And even in all of the work that I've done since then with Tend Lab, with Oyster, I felt like bringing more visibility to parents in the workplace and pregnant women in the workplace, I feel so much more confident about it because I know that like I made that mistake, but that shouldn't have been a mistake. That shouldn't have been considered a mistake.
Okay. I think that is a wrap. Thank you so much.
Although I'll never fully understand the experience of being a mother in the workplace, sitting down with Lisa, Kim, and Lucia has opened my eyes to some of the challenges they deal with every day. Here are some of my key takeaways from this episode. Flexibility is key for parents in the workplace. When it comes to accommodating parents or caregivers at work, leaders and people ops professionals can help by remembering that their schedules may need to shift unexpectedly and that that doesn't make them any less effective or capable at their jobs. There are still plenty of double standards when it comes to gender norms in the workplace. For example, statistics show that for women, having children can hinder their career path, while it often leads to a pay raise for men. Of course, the reasons behind this are complex and won't be solved overnight, but it's a reminder that systemic changes are part of the solution. Be solution-oriented. As PeopleOps leaders, it's our job to help find solutions and create a more harmonious workplace for everyone. This means planning well in advance to accommodate parents so we can ultimately retain top talent. Thank you so much again for listening to this episode of New World of Work. If you're interested in what today's job seekers are looking for in an employer, be sure to check out our employee expectations report by visiting the link in the show notes or visiting this URL, bit.ly/oyster report. I repeat, that's bit.ly/oyster report. Also, if you're planning to be at HR Transform in Las Vegas, March 27th to 29th, come visit us. Oyster will be at booth 411, with stations for interactive discussion and making your own swag. We'd love to talk with you, and if you're a listener, please let us know. Thank you for listening to New World of Work, the podcast exploring the new frontier of the modern workforce through an international lens. We hope this episode served to expand your horizons and open your mind to a new perspective. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so that we can reach more listeners. I'm your host, Reese Black. See you next time.